The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Well, welcome back. As we head into hour three, we won't be live broadcasting tomorrow because of Good Friday. So that means we also will not be having Rabbi Alush or doing our regular Friday stuff. So I thought I would get us into a kind of extended weekend frame of mind or thought with something a little different. This hour, our final hour before Good Friday. Young David, are you doing anything fun this weekend, by the way?
I have an Easter bonnet lunch on Saturday.
What's an Easter bonnet lunch?
I say that just as a joke, but it's inspired by the movie Easter Parade.
Yeah.
In your Easter bonnet with all the thrills upon it.
Do you realize it's freezing in here?
Am I falling on deaf ears?
No. Do you realize it's freezing? You guys have turned on some kind of icicle maker in here.
Suck it up.
Can we? All right, I'll go
get. 50 minutes to go, kid.
I'll get my jacket. I am going to, and it's a good time to plug, I'm going to be emceeing the Easter parade, the Ahwatukee Kiwanis Easter parade Saturday. So that's Saturday. People can go to that.
Well, you didn't tell me.
I didn't tell you?
We
interviewed Scott Ryan. Were you not here when we interviewed Scott to talk about it?
I didn't know you were emceeing it.
Well, that was the whole point of the interview.
Obviously, I'm not listening to the show.
Obviously, yes. So Saturday, Ahwatukee Kiwanis Easter Parade. It would be great to see folks there.
I'll bring my Imperial and I'll get in the parade.
Yeah, you can. It's probably not too late if you want to enter.
Really? Maybe I will.
A bunch of our friends, Zudi and other people, will be in the parade.
Oh, perfect.
Yeah, it'll be great. Okay, so what I wanted to do was something a little different, and I've been wanting to do this with y'all for a very long time, and I keep getting interrupted by news and stuff like that. So I haven't been able to do it. And this seemed like a really good time to do it. Young David, do you know what a commonplace book is? Are you familiar with the concept of a commonplace book?
Is it a book that's very common?
Not really. It's a book people carry of notes and quotes and sayings they like that they try and keep with them as long as they can, like their whole life. Just when they hear a witticism or a bon mot or see an interesting quote, they put it in that and it becomes their commonplace book. It's something used to compile knowledge. The word commonplace itself is from the Latin locus communis, meaning...
Communism?
No, locus communis, meaning something like a general topic, general applicable themes. And so that's where the term commonplace comes from. And the commonplace book is it's just wisdom that you write down. So my old boss and friend Bill Bennett had one, and there was a lot of wisdom in there. Things he had written down over the years, you know, from college and grad school and law school and stuff like that, and then professional life. So I have been making one as I have been going along for the past couple years. And I thought it might be fun to walk the audience through it. These are general pieces of wisdom that I have found worth writing down for as much permanence as possible that I sometimes redound to from time to time. Sometimes you'll hear me use them in my monologues. Sometimes you'll hear me use them with interviews or on the radio show. So I thought I'd run you through my commonplace book, General Wisdom Going Into the Long Weekend. What do you think about that?
I think it sounds like a great idea, and I'm excited to hear it.
Okay, thanks. I got your ratification. Maybe you'll start one. It's a good idea, right? I first started with a book by a sociologist named Neil Postman, probably really one of the only sociologists worth paying attention to. There were two, actually, but he would be one of them. He taught at New York University for many, many years, and had a lot of great books on education. He was consumed by mass media and education. He wrote an important book called The Disappearance of Childhood. And here's what he wrote. The importance of fairy tales lies in their capacity to reveal the existence of evil in a form that permits children to integrate it without trauma. This is possible not only because the content of fairy tales has grown organically over centuries and is under the control of adults, but also because the psychological context in which the tales are told is usually reassuring and is therefore therapeutic. What does it mean, he writes, that our children know what the elders know when they grow up too fast? It means they have become adults, or at least adult-like. It means that in having access to the previously hidden fruit of adult information, they are expelled from the garden of childhood. Children, it would seem, not only know there is a value in being different from adults, but actually care that a distinction be made. They know, perhaps better than adults, that something terribly important is lost if that distinction is blurred. It stands to reason that American culture is hostile to the idea of childhood, but it is comforting to know that children are not. Why is all that important to me? You heard me say the other day that I think perhaps the most, one of the two most important things in society right now, one of the two most important societal problems, if I could wave a wand and fix a societal problem, one of them would be the issue of children's literature, what we teach children. And much of my thought about this derives not from the battles that were prevalent 2 and 3 years ago in Florida and Ron DeSantis and elsewhere, really throughout the country, the textbook battles and the children's literature battles and the kindergarten and first grade books battles that we all saw, especially with the highly adult and sexualized themes. Those were the results of the problem that has been going on with children's literature for years, and what Neil Postman was writing about in the 1980s that I was quoting from. There is this tendency to make children grow up too fast. The disappearance of childhood is a terribly regrettable thing because of the importance of childhood, which is why when we fail to nurture children and we employ them for adult purposes, using them to soothe adult concerns and anxieties, as I like to put it, as we saw through COVID, the masking and vaccinations of children, the closing down of their schools, the weaponizing them against one another, the closing down of their after-school activities, all of that is the use and abuse of children too, for adult purposes. Remember, for a virus that really didn't affect them. And it seems to me that it's the mark of a sick society that abuses children this way. The Roman god Saturn was known to eat his children. That's actually the old revolutionary phrase. Like Saturn, all revolutions eat their children. Why did the Roman god Saturn eat his children? Because he was afraid of them. That's the mark of sickness. Now, what's ironic about that is, this is all just thoughts as to why I find these Postman quotes and book important. What's important, what's key about that notion is precisely this. What's key about that notion is that the left has been on a decades-long march to insist that America is a sick society. You've heard me on this before, but if you'll recall Richard Nixon's 1968 nomination acceptance speech at the Republican convention, he literally said, "We are not a sick society." And it's because that was the rampant theme at the time, that America was sick. not from a virus, but because of its politics and its policies and its industrialization and the war in Vietnam and the protests and the things you saw around the protests, that we were a sick society. From there, we went into the population bomb, which was a popular theme throughout the 1970s, that overpopulation was going to end, you know, entire ecosystems and kill millions of people and lead to privation and starvation. From there, we went into nuclear winter, and we went into Earth in the Balance and all the greenery stuff. It's the end of the world as we know it. It's the Barry Maguire song that we're on the eve of destruction. The left likes to foist on us that we're a sick society. Let me pick up on that, because they may have won in making us a sick society. We'll be right back on that point. Welcome back to the Seth Leibson Show. I'm running through some thoughts from my commonplace book, such as it is, and I'm talking about the use and abuse of children as the mark of a sick society. I was making the point right before the break that the left has invested in wanting to make America seem like it is a sick society. In the 60s, that Barry Maguire song, "We're on the Eve of Destruction." REM did its own version where it's the end of the world as we know it. There's been a lot like that. And yes, the population bomb, Paul Ehrlich in the 70s, Earth in the Balance with Al Gore, nuclear winter with Ronald Reagan. You may recall people walking around as skeletons during the nuclear arms race and with gas masks, the ads. There was an ad. I know everyone talks about the Daisy ad from the LBJ Goldwater race, but there was an ad against Ronald Reagan in 1984 where kindergartners were looking out of a school classroom when bombs were going off, nuclear bombs, implication being Ronald Reagan started a nuclear war, and that, you know, the use of children for that purpose as well. So there's been this mass investment in, and now you have Greta Thunberg, and she picked up from where Al Gore was, John Kerry and all that. Greta Thunberg having said such things as entire ecosystems disappearing before our very eyes. So the notion they've always wanted us to be a sick society. Now, why? Why would they be invested, one might ask, in us being a sick society? Well, so much the easier for really revolutionary politics. You don't fundamentally transform something that's okay, right? If all is pacific, what's the point of fundamental transformation? By the way, as Barack Obama coined that phrase, my view is that that phrase, fundamental transformation, is to Marxism as democratic socialism is to socialism. It's merely a euphemism for the effort to be attempted, which is in and of itself not so much fundamental as it is radical. And they won't use the word radical because people recoil from that, so they use the word fundamental. But it all amounts to the same thing. It all amounts to the same thing. And the point I'm trying to make about did they finally succeed in making us a sick society, they came damn near close with COVID. And it really exposed in two ways the use and abuse of children, which is the mark of a sick society, not the way they mean it, but the way we should mean it. They mean it in regard to everything else. We mean it in the abuse of children. As Hannah Arendt, the great philosopher, put it, the fantastic caricature of progressive education is abolishing the authority of adults and having children bear the burden of being asked to change and improve the world by having our political battles fought out in their schoolyards. And that's what we have done, isn't it? That is what we have done with the effort at transgenderism. That is what we did with the effort during COVID. That is what the sexualization of kindergarten, first, second, third, early elementary grade books is all about. If you think it's not all a political effort, you're wrong. It is a political effort. The personal is political, the radical Marxist feminist told us in the 1970s. And that's what they're making all this about. Education and society was doing just fine when we had better children's books and better fairy tales, and when we weren't sexualizing our children or pitting them against each other or instantiating fear in them the way we did with COVID and masks and vaccines and shutting down their after school activities and shutting down their school routines and activities. That was all the use and abuse of children. That is sick. That is sick. Society may have succeeded in making us a sick place, as much as I hate to say it. But obsta principis, as my old classics professor used to say, beware first thoughts, because if we are indeed a sick society, beware radical transformation, beware fundamental transformation, beware the temptation and the impulse to engage in revolutionary activity, because we do not need the kind of revolutionary activity that gets celebrated at clubs that celebrate Lenin and Marx like at ASU or that celebrates Marx like in Teen Vogue. We're not talking about that kind of revolutionary activity. We're talking about the only kind of revolutionary activity we should be talking about if we must use that phrase. And that is the real point of a revolution. The real point of a revolution is to take you back to basics, isn't it? Isn't it? That's what it's about. It's not about something new, really. It's about something old, which is what made, ironically, the American Revolution such an interesting thing in an ironic sense. It was a revolution, but we called it a new order of the ages, didn't we? Novus Ordo Seclorum. Why was it a new order of the ages? Because it was the first country built on an old idea, the old idea being that which was written in our hearts or on our hearts, natural law. The laws of nature and nature's God. That's what our revolution began with. It's kind of an older concept than 1776, but no other society until ours, no other culture until ours, no other revolution or country until ours founded itself on the justification of the rights of man based on natural law. Let me pick up on that when we come right back. No, we're not going away. I still have time. Sorry. Let me stay with it then.
Good. Stay with me here.
Yeah. Good. Thank you. I'm in an alternate studio today, so I'm just a little cattywampus. Do you like that? Cattywampus. Do you know
cattywampus. I knew what that meant.
You knew cattywampus. Okay. You can put that in your comment, please. You don't need to. You know it. Yes. We were the first country to found itself not on a claim of theological right, the divine right of kings, or bloodlines. That was the magic. That was what was the new order of our of the ages, the Novus Ordo Seclorum of our founding, which was a revolution, which is based on the concept of the laws of nature and nature's God. By the way, note too, the conflict this whole transgender movement, particularly with our children, and particularly by implanting it and trying to place it into the schoolyards and school rooms of our children, is all about. It's a war against nature. It is a battle against not just nature, but our founding. Or maybe I should say not just our founding, but nature. Or maybe I should just say against the natural order of things. And the revolt against nature is classic Marxism. That's what Marx was all about. And that's the kind of revolution that they want based on the kind of sick society they want us to believe we are. The degree to which we are a sick society is only, in my mind, the degree to which we use and abuse our children for adult purposes. Now I'll take a commercial break.
Yes, you're allowed to now.
Welcome back to the Seth Leibson Show. That's the Rockford Files theme song. If you call young David on his cell phone, you get the Jim Rockford answering machine, don't you?
This is true. I have mimicked my voicemail after his own.
Yeah. So leave him a message if you have his cell phone number and leave it like Angel or someone, right? Or Beth. Was Beth his attorney?
Oh, yeah. I wouldn't mind any pretty girls calling me up.
Beth Davenport was his attorney. Hey, Jim, the check bounced or something like, hey, Jim.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Remember that brown jacket that you loved?
Yeah.
Sorry, we stained it.
Sorry, we stained it. Sorry, it's ruined. Yeah. I've been walking you through my commonplace book, and it starts, interestingly enough, with thoughts and writings about children. One of them related to all of this, and maybe related to the COVID experience too, I really liked is from a physical scientist named Heather Hing. She's married to Brett Weinstein, and they wrote a book together. She said, it's a fine needle to thread, giving children enough space to make their own decisions and mistakes, and protecting them from real danger. Our societal pendulum has swung too far to one side, to protecting children against all risk and harm, such that many who come of age under this paradigm feel that everything is a threat, that they need safe spaces, that words are violence. By comparison, children with exposure to diverse experiences, physical, psychological, intellectual, learn what is possible and become more expansive. It is imperative that children experience discomfort in each of these realms, physical, psychological, and intellectual. Absent that, they end up full grown but confused about what harm actually is. They end up children in the bodies of adults. You see much of that? You see much of that? When you have college students requiring hug dolls and pillows and cuddle rooms because they don't like the outcome of an election, or when the presence of a Dennis Prager or a Charlie Kirk or a Heather MacDonald on their campus sends them into emotional and mental breakdown, this is what you have. This is the dividend of what Heather Heng was warning about, because these children never experienced discomfort in any realm. They were protected and coddled such that they believe that things like words can be violence. He's not a PhD like Heather Heng is, but he's wise beyond measure. Adam Carolla. Dennis Prager once said, Adam Carolla understands human nature better than anyone he has ever met. And Dennis Prager has met a lot of people, known a lot of public intellectuals, too. Adam testified to Congress a couple years back, and he said, when we talk about kids, we have to remember we are adults, and we're not doing children at college campuses any favors right now. These kids grew up dipped in Purell, playing soccer games where they never kept score, and watching shows like Wow Wow Wubsy, and we're asking them to be mature, when the truth is what we need is adults to start being adults. Studies have shown that if you take people and put them in a zero-gravity environment like astronauts, they lose muscle mass, they lose bone density. We're taking these kids in the name of protection, we're putting them in a zero-gravity environment, and they are losing muscle mass and bone density. They need to live in a world that has gravity. You need to expose your children to germs and dirt and the environment to build up their immune system. Our plan is to put them in the bubble, keep them away from everything, and somehow they will come out stronger when they emerge from the bubble. And that's not happening. Children may be the future, but we are the present and we are the adults and we need to act like it. And what's going on in our schools and in our campuses is a lack of law and order. We need to bring back law and order. But I think if we just had order, we wouldn't need law. A lot more coming up. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Seth Leibson Show. I'm running through thoughts from my commonplace book for you as we're getting us into the long weekend here, the especially religious weekend. And I ran through some themes in my commonplace book on children. This is related at the next level. And I'm guided by the notion that C.S. Lewis has that to miseducate our children is to subject them much more easily to propaganda when they get older. This is why the teaching of history is so important, particularly American history. When you see the rot that is produced by such things as the 1619 Project, or when you see Kamala Harris and others decry what Ron DeSantis was doing with the teaching of American history and the American history standards in Florida, they get away with it because people don't actually know their history. They have been subjected, captured, and enraptured by propaganda. Now, some of them know better. I don't know. Kamala Harris may know better. She may. But they are weaponizing or at least exploiting people's lack of knowledge of history for the political purpose. Again, a fundamental transformation, which is just a euphemism for revolution. Revolution can be peaceful, by the way. It will end up not being peaceful because every Marxist revolution, every Marxist society has ended up becoming violent. But you can get to a revolution through nonviolent means. And I submit to you, we are going through one right now. And it's beginning in our classrooms, which gives us kind of the next entree into the segment of my into the next section of my commonplace book. Milan Kundera, fascinating Czech writer. Did you ever read any of his stuff, young David?
I have not.
Fascinating writer. Wrote in his book of Laughter and Forgetting, the first step in liquidating a people is to erase its memory, destroy its books, its culture, its history. Then have somebody write new books, manufacture a new culture, invent a new history. And before long, the nation will begin to forget what it is and what it was. The world around it will forget even faster. Is that not maybe the most important quote in the world? Should I do it again? The first step in liquidating a people is to erase its memory, destroy its books, its culture, its history. Then have somebody write new books, manufacture a new culture, invent a new history. And before long, the nation will begin to forget what it is and what it was. That's what we have. That's what we have. And that's why C.S. Lewis could say the right defense against false sentiments is to inculcate just sentiments. By starving the sensibility of our pupils, we only make them easier prey to the propagandist when he comes. The 1619 stuff, the BLM history standards, the revision of history. Orwell was onto this, of course, in 1984. You all know this very well, especially those who are regular listeners to the show. This is the theme I come to again and again and again from Orwell, where he writes, every record has been destroyed or falsified, every book rewritten, every picture has been repainted, every statue and street building has been renamed, every date has been altered, and the process is continuing day by day and minute by minute. History has stopped and nothing exists except an endless present in which the party is always right. This is why, of course, I rail against the frenetic moment, the frenzy that the left likes to keep us in, the freneticism that the left likes to keep us in. Nothing exists except an endless present. You can't focus on deep things. You can't focus on important things. You can't focus on durable things when the when there's a continuing frenzy and an endless present that you're put through every single day. As Leo Strauss said, it was an interesting observation of his that the morning prayer had been replaced by the morning paper. Not the same thing every day, but something new every day. That is to say, not a durable thing. Yes. William Buckley was kind of on to this a little bit as well when he said, I think the attenuation of the early principles of this country has made America vulnerable to the most opportunistic ideology of the day, the strange and complex ideology of modern liberalism. You understand the point there. It's really the same point. The attenuation, which means the weakening, the attenuation of the early principles of this country, the weakening of them, has made America vulnerable to the most opportunistic ideology of the day. The complex ideology of modern liberalism. Related to it, and related to the kinds of writings that Milan Kundera engaged in, was someone he knew, another Czech scholar, Václav Havel, who ultimately not only was imprisoned by the communists, but later, once the fall of the of communism in Europe came in 1989. Ultimately, he became the president. It's interesting. What's the biblical line that reminds you of? The stone that was mocked has become the chief cornerstone. You know that line, young David? You know your Bible. You know that line. Stone that was mocked has become the stone that was scorned has become the chief cornerstone. Yes, yes? Yes, yes. We'll just assume yes. We'll assume yes. Václav Havel said, the post-totalitarian system touches people at every step, but it does so with its ideological gloves on. This is why life in the system is so thoroughly permeated with hypocrisy and lies. Government by bureaucracy is called popular government. The working class is enslaved in the name of the working class. The complete degradation of the individual is presented as the liberation of the individual. Depriving people of information is called making information available. The use of power to manipulate is called public empowerment, and the arbitrary abuse of power is called observance of the legal code. The repression of culture is called the development of culture. The expansion of imperial influence is presented as support for the oppressed. The lack of free expression becomes the highest form of freedom. Farcical elections become the highest form of democracy. Banning independent thought becomes the most scientific of worldviews. Because the regime is captive to its own lies, he writes, it must falsify everything. It falsifies the past, it falsifies the present, and it falsifies the future. It falsifies statistics. It pretends not to possess an omnipotent and unprincipled police apparatus. It pretends to respect human rights. It pretends to persecute no one. It pretends to fear nothing. It pretends to pretend nothing. That's Vaclav Havel. The full Leo Strauss quote that I was referring to, also in my Commonplace book, is the reading of the morning paper, reading of the morning prayer has been replaced by the reading of the morning paper. Not every day the same thing, the same reminder of man's absolute duty and exalted destiny, but every day something new with no reminder of duty and exalted destiny. Specialization, knowing more and more about less and less, the practical impossibility of concentration upon the very few essential things upon which man's whole entirety depends. Welcome back to the Seth Leibson Show. WKRP in Cincinnati theme song. The lyrics are so great. What's that one line in there that you and I like so much? Do you remember?
The price for finding me was losing
you. Yeah. That's right. You're a good singer. Heading up that highway, leaving you behind. Hardest thing I've ever had to do. Broke my heart in two, but baby, pay no mind. The price for finding me was losing you. Yeah.
I think if you ever need a career change late in life, you can always start fresh in Ohio, and you'll be called Seth in Cincinnati.
Seth in Cincinnati. Listen, let me say that portions of our show are brought to you by our good friends at YRefi. YRefi has a secure investment in a collateralized portfolio, and it's an excellent opportunity because you can earn up to a 10.25% fixed rate of return with YRefi. And guess what? It's not correlated to the stock market or the Federal Reserve. That's right. Up to a 10.25% fixed rate of return with YRefi. You can turn your income on or off. You can compound it, whatever you like. There's no attack on principal if you ever need your money back. With YRefi, there are absolutely no fees. And of course, you get a monthly statement with no surprises. So check them out at investyrefi.com. That's invest, the letter Y, then refy.com. Or give them a call at 888-YRefi24. 888-YRefi24. I haven't even begun to scratch the surface of my Commonplace book, but I'll close with Bill McClay, who I guess he and Hadley Arkus are probably the only ones alive who are in my Commonplace book. But Bill McClay is an American historian who's been on the show any number of times. He's a professor of American history at Hillsdale College. Wilfred McClay is his formal name, but he goes by Bill McClay. And he has a great book on American history called The Land of Hope. And the intro is just so beautiful. He says, "For the human animal, meaning is not a luxury. It is a necessity. Without it, we perish. Historical consciousness is to civilized society what memory is to individual identity. Without memory and without the stories by which our memories are carried forward, we cannot say who or what we are. Without them, our life and thought dissolve into a meaningless, unrelated rush of events. I give you the frenzy." God bless you all, folks. Thanks for doing some of that journey with me. I hope you enjoyed it, and I hope you have a meaningful and happy good. Well, I don't think you can wish someone a happy Good Friday. I hope you have a meaningful Good Friday and a happy Easter. Can we do it that way? Until next week, God bless you all, and class dismissed.
3-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.